Yesterday, we brought you the story of how Kodiak generates almost 100% of its power with renewable energy. The local co-op has managed to do that while keeping electric rates stable. In fact, the price of electricity in Kodiak has dropped slightly since 2000. So can other communities follow the Kodiak model? Rachel Waldholtz from Alaska's Energy Desk explains what Kodiak can teach the world and what might be pretty unique.
It seems like no matter where you are in Kodiak, you can look up and see the wind turbines. There are six of them, spinning on Pillar Mountain above town. I'm standing beneath one with Jennifer Rich Creek, who works for the local electric co-op. And it is very, very windy up here. You can hear the rhythm of the blades.
You don't realize how big those blades are when you're looking up from down below.
Yeah. Big and beautiful. I think they look like whale bones. They've got this just great curve to them.
Giant, elegant, charismatic, the wind turbines are definitely the most visible symbol of Kodiak's quest to go nearly 100% renewable. If the wind is blowing, they might account for 80% of the power used at any given moment. In the utility world, that is a huge number. But over the course of a whole year, wind probably supplies about 20% of the region's power. Rich Creek says the real workhorse is hydro.
Hydro is the key. It was the key for us, and I see it as the key throughout the country.
When the Kodiak Electric Association set a goal of 95% renewable energy back in 2007, it had a major head start. Terror Lake, their hydro project, was built by the state in the 1980s. Ian Baring-Gould works for the National Renewable Energy Lab in Boulder, Colorado. He says many communities don't have that option.
Kodiak is very unique in that it has great hydro resources and a good wind resource, which is really unique and has allowed them to do what they're doing.
But he says Kodiak is still an example. They've proven it's technically feasible to add a lot of renewable energy to a small grid, and that it can make sense economically. Other cities might not have Kodiak's exact combination of wind and hydro.
But they have other combinations, and they might not be able to get to 100%, which Kodiak can do, but they could get to 80% or 40% or 65%.
Baring-Gould says the way Kodiak did it is also a lesson. They built on their hydro step by step, problem solving over nearly a decade. The result is a system that combines wind, batteries, and flywheels, basically heavy spinning masses that store energy as motion. Along the way, they became perhaps the first system in the world to combine flywheels and batteries in this way. Baring-Gould says that process is a blueprint for isolated communities with standalone grids from the Arctic to the Philippines. But Kodiak isn't just an example for small communities. There are lessons for the big grids of the lower 48, too. To understand why, just listen to the news.
Hurricane Harvey hit the coast last night right at just about 10 o'clock, knocking power out to tens of thousands of people.
Hurricane Irma has left millions of people without power, 3.5 million people in Florida alone.
Massive storms like Irma and Harvey and Hurricane Sandy before them can leave tons of people without power. And that's increasing interest in microgrids. Places like hospitals, military bases, and industrial sites want to be able to separate from the larger grid and generate their own power during emergencies. And once you go down that path, there can be a lot of other benefits to being on a microgrid. Brian Hirsch is an energy consultant in Anchorage. He says maybe at times it's cheaper to generate some of your own power.
And then you have some decision making going on to say, well, when does it make sense for me to generate my own power? When does it make sense for me to sell power back to the bigger grid? When does it make sense for me to just shut my stuff down and buy power from the grid like I typically do?
And those kinds of standalone microgrids, that's exactly what Kodiak is, by necessity. Like so many other communities in Alaska, it's too remote to connect to any larger grid. Ian Baring-Gould says Alaska knows how to run the kinds of self-contained grids the rest of the world is just starting to wake up to.
Alaskans have been doing this for 50 years.
Kodiak, he says, just proves you can take it a step further. If you need proof that this is not all pie in the sky, just visit some of the system's largest energy users. Fish processors.
So we call it the slime line just because it's a wet environment.
James Turner manages the Ocean Beauty seafood plant in Kodiak. Inside, it's a blur of bright lights, fish parts on conveyor belts, workers in hairnets and gloves. And then there are the freezers. So many different kinds of freezers.
And then they're freezing halibut.
Oh, God, they're huge!
Plants like this use a lot of power. So the cost and reliability of electricity are a big deal, Turner says. And Kodiak Electric has delivered on both. I asked Turner if it matters to him that his freezers and conveyor belts are runoff renewables.
It is to me, absolutely. Well, it's better for the environment. You know, I mean, we've got to think about our industry is run off the environment. You know, everything that we do comes out of the sea. You know, there's certain things that we have to burn diesel on, but power isn't one of them.
Nope, it's not. In Kodiak, that's taken care of by the wind and the rain. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholz in Anchorage.